it's really about who can sort of minimize the mistakes and make the least amount of mistakes and just sail a really smart series.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM. With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
Why We Kneel, How We Rise is a new book by Michael Holding. It's out now, and we're very happy to have the opportunity to speak with Michael. A very good afternoon to you. How are you getting on?
Hi, good afternoon, Ger. I'm fine, thanks. I would love to tell you more soon, but I'll survive.
Well, it's funny. This is one of the few weeks in Irish history where we've had back-to-back days with the actual sun shining. So wherever you are in the world, you should be in Ireland right now.
Okay.
Your new book has a series of history lessons and personal stories from some of the world's most famous athletes. So Naomi Osaka, Thierry Henry, Michael Johnson, and loads more. And I wonder what that experience was like for you, gathering these stories and putting them together and trying to form them into a narrative. In the end, it turned out there were so many commonalities between their experiences that you didn't really have much work to do to tie them together, but the work was the history around the difficulties that people of color have had since the dawn of time. So how was that emotionally for you to go on that journey?
First of all, Joe, I wanted to say thank you for recognizing where the work was. You know, talking to the great stars and all that, as far as I'm concerned, was to introduce to people the fact that irrespective of your background, irrespective of the country in which you live, irrespective of how rich you were, irrespective of how famous you were, once the color of your skin is dark, you have an extra hurdle to take. The rest of it was hard work. Going and doing the discovery, going and doing the research, and being able to identify so much that has been hidden from us throughout history, that was disturbing. The treatment of people with dark skin, that was disturbing. But talking to these stars, I was spellbound as a matter of fact talking to some of them, because what they were telling me is something I already know. But I'm trying to use them to explain to people the fact that it doesn't matter where you're from.
I think for me, one of the most interesting parts about this is your own journey to the point where you begin to see the racism that is endemic around the world, that there's a point in your life where you didn't even notice that this was something. And then it's kind of a slow, steady awakening on your part. You're like, hang on a second, I see this now everywhere I go. And that's captured really well in the book through personal stories. I think the other very powerful aspect of it, though, is that very, very coldly and very rationally, you explain where the racism originates from. And, you know, the decision to write a book about that, it's not a history lesson that is taught in schools. It's not a history lesson that people want to hear.
No.
So what's the response like when you're telling people, you need to pay attention to this?
Well, to be honest, so far, I've not had any pushback from people that I've met or people that have said anything to me. A lot of the feedback, Jura, has been people saying, oh, I didn't know this. Thanks for opening my eyes. I need to now investigate this a bit further so that I can really be educated. That's what I've been getting from a lot of people. I don't know what social media is doing. I would assume and I would think that there is a lot happening on social media, people pushing back and people cursing or whatever. I have no idea because I don't do social media. But the ordinary man in the street, I worked at Royal Ascot recently and walking into the stands, walking into the racetrack, people were there shouting, "Hi, Mikey, I like what I hear you saying on Sky." That's the reaction that I've been getting. When I did that program on Good Morning Britain, the TV program, at the end of it, somebody came and pushed a note through my letterbox. This is someone I did not even know. I have kept the note. I have it here and I'll read it for you, Jerk, because this is a family that I did not know, but they listened to me on Good Morning Breakfast, and this is a note they'll push through my letterbox. "Dear Michael, just saw your interview on GMB. So very passionate and empowered. Very eloquently said. It has certainly opened our eyes. Thank you very much. And then signed by the husband and wife. So that is the sort of response I've been getting. And I know, sure, that, as I say to people, we have been brainwashed. Not just blacks, whites, everybody. We have all been brainwashed to suit a certain narrative. And when people are discovering the real world and the real truth, they are grateful to be discovering it.
When did you realize this?
When did I realize that we were brainwashed?
Yeah.
From early, from different things that I started to discover and from different things that people started to talk about. You know, there's so much that has happened that they try to use to push a particular narrative. I grew up in a Christian household. My mother sang in the church choir. My father was an altar boy. So I had to go to church every Sunday growing up, Sunday school, whatever. Every picture, every photograph, every sculpture I saw of Jesus Christ was a white man with blonde hair and blue eyes. That's what I was taught. And you come to absorb that and you think, that is the fact. That is the way Jesus Christ looked. But when you start to get educated properly and you get to understand the world, you know that it is impossible for Jesus Christ to have looked like that at that time of the existence of Earth in that part of the world. It is impossible. Every movie that was made, every play that they had about Jesus Christ and Christianity, the man that betrayed Jesus Christ, Judas, was portrayed as a black man. Again, that is instilling in your mind evil. Black man, he is evil. He betrayed Jesus Christ. That is what the brainwashing has been all about. And that is just one instance. There are so many others.
So as a child, right, you bear witness to this. But at what point, when did your education begin? And when did the penny drop for you that this was happening in the world?
Well, it's a process. At different times, you think to yourself, no, what they have been telling me, how can this be true? How can this be real? And as a child, I didn't know that Jesus Christ could not have looked like that. You just absorb it. That's what they tell you. Later on in life, when you start to learn about the world and you start to understand what the world is all about, that is when you get to discover these things. When I was growing up, they told me Christopher Columbus discovered Jamaica in 1494 with the three ships, the Santa Maria, the Pinta. How can you discover somewhere that people are already living, people in the area are already trading amongst themselves, and you tell me that you discover Jamaica? You made Europe aware of Jamaica. But the arrogance of Europeans, it does not exist until they know. So they discovered it.
Is it fair to say, Michael, that part of your sporting career would have helped in this, actually traveling to Europe, actually
definitely,
seeing the world?
Definitely, Owen. I tell people traveling is the greatest education. You need to travel the world to experience different cultures, experience different countries, experience different people. It's the greatest education. Being able to play cricket and travel the world has helped me enormously. I learned even more. I heard about South Africa. I heard about apartheid. I heard about different things happening at different stages in South Africa. When I started to go to South Africa, I started to learn more and more. Going to a country, you learn. I have made friends in South Africa amongst Africans, amongst British-based South Africans. Black South Africa, I've made friends amongst everyone. And you get to hear all the stories. I get to learn more and more about the country. Going all over the world, you learn.
That process that you're talking about, that you go through, how do we accelerate that process for other people? How do we chip away at centuries of that European arrogance when it comes to our education system, when it comes to human interaction, when it comes to being kind to each other?
By teaching the truth, Jerv. Teaching the truth so that everyone knows what the real history is. We don't want to be taught the edited history. We don't want to be taught the history that suits one set of people. all the history that I learned was about the Europeans and the white race. I never knew and was taught anything about what great things black people and people of color had done. You hear, we're in a pandemic right now, sir. We hear that it was an English doctor that is the father of inoculation and immunization because he did this experiment with cowpox and smallpox. Before he was born, an African, a black man, introduced inoculations to the Western world in Boston, Massachusetts, when smallpox was destroying all of Boston. He went to his master, he was a slave, owned by a pastor, by the way, went to his master and told his master about what he had seen and learned in Africa about cutting the skin of a healthy person and using posture on an unhealthy person, putting it on the skin so that the person could, the body could identify this as an enemy. And that is how you get demonization. That is from an African way before Jemison or Jepson or whatever his name is was born. But black man, African, slave, we're not going to give him any credit.
So when you write a book like this, it's your part in trying to make people aware of this. And it's a starter for conversations that are difficult conversations, probably for a lot of people to go through. Because we all have to check our biases and go, actually, how implicated am I? And how implicated is everybody listening and watching in maintaining all of the systems that are preventing equality? Why did you decide to write the book?
Before we go to why I decided to write the book, let us understand the situation. People cannot be blamed for believing what they are taught. So I want people to recognize that first of all. Don't blame me for believing that Jesus was a white man with blonde hair and blue eyes. I don't blame a white man for trying to preach that because that is what he has learned. We're going back to the institutionalized racism and the systemic racism. That is the problem. Too many people have been taught the wrong thing. Why do you think one race feels superior to another? Because that is what they were made to believe. All the stories that I talk about there, Jer, in going back in the history, about these scientists, these so-called scientists, trying to categorize people and saying the black man's brain is small because his head is, all that rubbish was done because they had to make sure that when they start to do these things to these people, they do not feel guilty. It is okay. We are going to brainwash these people into believing that these people are subhuman. So when they start to abuse them, when they do whatever they want to do to them, they are not guilty. They don't feel guilty. And that is the problem. The brainwashing that took place years ago. How do we solve that? By the same education I'm talking about, by educating people so that they understand and know that we're all human beings, we're all on the same level. I can bowl faster than you, that's how we want to be judged. I can run faster than you, that's how we want to be judged. I can do a mathematical equation faster than you, that's how we want to be judged. Not by the fact that you think, oh, he's a black man or he's a man of color, I am white, I have to be superior to him. That doesn't work.
It doesn't work for anybody. Like,
no,
it's already
that's what has been going on for centuries. And that is what people believe. You have people being born today, being born and thinking to themselves, oh hell, my skin is dark. I'm inferior to that person who is light skinned. That is why my mother had problems with her family for marrying a black man. That is why the skin lightening cream that you see being used all over the world is a multi-billion dollar business. Because it is in people's head that the lighter their skin, the easier it is for them to get forward.
The match last year, which was rained off, or the delay where you were speaking on Sky, which kind of kicked off the video that went viral. The transformation in your role and the role that you've had since then has been hugely important in having conversations and bringing that conversation to areas that maybe this conversation might not have been happening. Were you at any point conscious that that was going to happen? Like, how quickly did you realize that actually, you know what, there's something happening here that I have seized or has seized me, and I need to keep going with this?
I never intended to. When I said what I said on Skype, I thought that's it. I've spoken my piece, and you know, time to move on. Let me go back and do my day job now. I'm back to being a cricket commentator. I never ever thought about writing a book. I never ever thought about what's happening now with so many people calling, wanting interviews and wanting me to talk. I never ever thought about that. That has not been my life. Throughout my entire career, I never spoke about racism, because I would just say, sure, no problem. Those are idiots. I'll go home to Jamaica and I'll be fine. I'll go back to my friends and family who love me and everything will be fine. I never thought about that. The reason this book was written is, for want of a better word, pressure from people around me. Thierry Henry calling me, my ghostwriter calling me. Even Ian Ward in the commentary box said to me after we were done and went back there to commentary box, he said to me, so Mikey, what next? And I looked at him critically, what do you mean, what next? I have said what I have to say. But of course, constantly people coming to you and say, no, you can't stop there. Let us go further. That's why the book came about.
Are you happy now that that pressure came on you?
Yes, I'm happy that the book has been written, because I have seen a positive impact from the book going. And I've, as I said, I've had so much positive feedback from people. A lot of people have said, oh, I am glad I'm hearing all this. Because people were just going through their life, just floating along, not recognizing anything that was wrong around them. And people were even thinking, oh, he has a chip on his shoulder. You have heard the usual reports from people when a black man speaks up. Oh, there goes another angry black man. And they don't understand why the man is angry.
Do you think that society has progressed to the point where the reaction would have been different 20 years ago, for example, had you written this book then?
No, I don't think so. We have seen throughout history, Owen, that whenever a black man stands up and speaks his mind and criticizes the treatment that he's getting, that those people get ostracized. From many years ago to present, Colin Kaepernick wasn't 20 years ago. He started to protest about the treatment of people of color in America. His career came to an end immediately. No NFL team signed him at the end of that year when his contract was up. So you don't have to go back 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
The decision that Kaepernick made in taking the knee is a hugely important moment in I think, a rebirth of activism from athletes. And we've seen where that went last year with the kneeling before matches. How do we make sure that the kneeling before matches is more important and more powerful than the pre-match handshake, which obviously was brought in 10 years previously, and it's not just part of the day-to-day? Like, I guess what I'm concerned about is that the momentum behind the movement for equality was huge last year. Unfortunately, it was driven by tragedy and murder. Mm-hmm. How do we make sure that people continue to listen to your voice, have these conversations, that the next generation of cricketers and American footballers and soccer players and tennis players use the platform they have to help the education piece happen?
Jerry, it's a partnership. If all we're going to have is people taking the knee and people demonstrating and people talking, nothing is going to get any better. It has to be a partnership. And I see that partnership building. I see corporations and big money getting involved to try to level the playing field and to make sure that a lot of the victimization that took place doesn't take place any longer. And I use America more as an example, because I see it more in America than I see it in the United Kingdom. Big companies, Bank of America, Amazon, Nike, JP Morgan, all of them are putting money towards projects to help people of color. We know the history of America. We know, and I've written about it in the book, houses were built, and on the title, it was stated, no black person must own any house or any build or anything in this part. When you can have that, you know the situation. So when you have corporations and big money going towards trying to level the playing field, you know you're moving in the right direction. I want people to continue taking the knee, but taking the knee alone doesn't do anything. There has to be action beyond taking the knee. You have people that are getting so frustrated that they want to stop taking the knee because they said they don't see any action. But if you stop taking the knee, what pressure is there for people to make change? You have to keep it in people's face. You have got to keep the focus there. You have got to make people aware that you have not given up, that you will continue to show that gesture to support the fact that Black Lives Matter. And irrespective of how frustrated you get, keep on doing it.
So there is an importance to that. While it's symbol, it's an important symbol, and it needs to be followed up with legislation. It needs to be followed up with, as you said, collaboration, a partnership with people in other communities who are going to have difficult conversations about their role in structural racism.
Yes, these conversations are not going to be easy. But at the same time, people are recognizing that what people have been saying is the truth. And people are recognizing that good people, this is, want to make a better world. Jerry, you'll always have people that don't care. They're happy, they're comfortable with their life, they don't care. But a lot of people who are happy and comfortable with their lives still want to see a better world. And they will try to do what they think is best to get a better world. And that's all we need. People willing to listen, to hear, to understand, to recognize, and say, yes, let us try and make things better.
It must be pretty exhausting for you on a personal level to continue to have to carry this. I'm always very conscious that we're two white presenters of a show here in Dublin, and we're asking you to share your experiences of racism and to carry that burden, to relive all the horrible things that have happened. And, you know, I can only imagine that after a certain period of time, you're like, geez, I have to tell the story again.
Jer, I just said the same thing to the lady at Simon & Schuster. She keeps on updating my schedule as to who I have to speak to. And I've done approaching 30 different interviews now, whether it's on newspapers, magazines, radio stations, podcasts, television. And she sent me a new schedule with another one added going forward again. And I said to her, Saba, please let this be the last updated schedule that you're sending me. I am tired of saying the same thing over and over and over again. I've spoken to enough people. So, you know, that is in response to what you just asking me about how difficult it is. It's overbearing. I am dying for cricket to start again so I can go back to my day job.
But I think it's a key point. One of the most interesting texts on racism over the last while is why I'm no longer speaking to white people about the issue of race. And it's like, it's actually not your burden, and it's not people of color's burden, and it's not black people's burden to solve the issue of racism, because you didn't start it. It's actually...
And we can't do it on our own either.
It's white Europeans and it's white Americans, and it's up to us to try and fix this.
Well, yes, but as I said, it has to be a partnership. There's no point one set of people trying to fix it. Because if you say, okay, it's white people that have to fix it, black people have to be involved as well. They have
100%.
To understand everything that is going on. Because there are a lot of hate on both sides here, and we need to get rid of that.
There must have been some joy in writing the book, some bit of surprise, some good fun.
I had was interaction with some of those big stars. Because
that's what I was asking. Yeah. Is there any parts of that?
Definitely. I had an hour with Michael Johnson, and I've always admired him. You know, Usain Bolt is from Jamaica, so you're accustomed to Usain Bolt to a degree. But the hour that I spent with Michael Johnson, the phone call I got from Thierry Henry, No, those things lifted me. Naomi Osaka taking time out to contribute to this book when she's, as we have seen, is suffering so much from mental stress right now and stopping playing tennis. You know, Adam Goods in Australia, Makaya Intini opening up his soul to tell me why he ran to the ground instead of driving on the bus. No, those things made me feel good that these people were willing to open their lives and open their souls and let me in. But the other aspects of the book, I don't feel good about them. I cannot feel good about reading the history of what took place in America. But it had to be done, because if it don't show people why they are sick, they can't get better.
It did have to be done. And that I think is the tragedy of the world that we have created. But hopefully this book helps to start the conversation. And I think, like, I know that obviously your legacy before this was one of the best fast bowlers in history, but your legacy is going to be the work that you've done in this part of your career as a broadcaster. And, you know, I hope that you do continue it, despite the fact that it must be exhausting.
Well, I hope that it will make a difference. You know, writing this book was difficult. If I get the results that I'm hoping for, that people will learn from the book and people will recognize what was wrong and try to make things better, that will make me a very happy man. Because I won't live to see it, but I'm hoping for a better world for my children and my grandchildren and great-grandchildren and people like that. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, that is it. I think all that any of us can ever really hope for. And as I said, look, we don't take the burden that it is for you to speak about this again and again lightly. Like, I really do appreciate the amount of time that you spent explaining again, I'd say for the 100th time, stuff that really should be unnecessary, but unfortunately is necessary, Michael. So the book is called Why We Kneel, How We Rise. Michael Holding, thank you so much for your time.
No, thanks for having me, sir. The further this word spreads, the better. And I'm hoping that it does.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.